Mike Quigley, the Democrat from Illinois' 5th, joins us now on WGN. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Speaking of Illinois politicians, a moment ago we talked to Rod Blagojevich's defense attorney, and we'll see what the fate of Mike Madigan is shortly. Any comment on either of those news developments?
Yeah, look, I think you have to put it into perspective. I got in Chicago politics in 82 and would have had 39 aldermen indicted. How many governors have gone to jail? And, of course, today's news. The way I try to express it to people is that the real cost of corruption is the loss of the public's trust. It's hard enough to make the tough calls you make in government in anything you do, but it's much tougher if the public doesn't trust the process and they have a horrible view of government, which is so important in their lives.
Well, that's the point I was trying to make to the attorney. You know, the point that I was trying to make and that we went back and forth with Leonard Goodman, Mike Quigley, was that maybe the system is imperfect, but if the jury says you're guilty, then you are guilty. One of my listeners said that there was an op-ed in the paper today by Mr. Goodman, and he made a good case for Rod's innocence. But I wasn't in the room, and it's not like it was a bank robbery and did he point the gun and say, give me the money or not? It can be a gray area. Is one thing politicking and is another thing illegally shaking down a hospital or trying to sell a Senate seat? And the jury said what Rod Blagojevich did is wrong. I can live with that. I'm not worried about our system as a result of that. And if new information becomes available, then it'll be overturned. It's not perfect, but that's what we've got. So I disagree with the attorney that we have to have some confidence in the system, and I do. And I don't think Rod Blagojevich is an example of the system gone awry.
No, I agree. And I think we're not in a position to begin to address it because of the new administration and as polarized as we are. But we've got to reassess the whole process of pardons. You have to forgive me for taking it personally when this president pardoned over 200 people that stormed the Capitol and tried to lynch the vice president of the United States and come after us in a violent coup, and they've been pardoned as well. So we've got to assess this. There are times and places where pardons make perfect sense when they're overdue, but they should be few and far between, well-researched, and I think more importantly, publicly discussed why decisions were made. So the public has faith in that process, and I don't think you can just, with the next administration, say, well, we're going to pardon whomever you convict, or we've got a real problem with the overall system.
Well, I don't know how you fix that. That is in the Constitution. The president can even preemptively pardon people or go back and pardon people. And I don't know how you're going to change that other than call on the better angels of the next person in office, right?
You're right. But because this is becoming so important, there are fundamentals of the Constitution that we have to look at. Look, we are set on the bedrock, the foundation of the Constitution and the laws that we live by. But there's something more important, and it's hard to cover with the Constitution, with laws. It's norms, what's just what people understand to be normal practice and procedure in a democratic republic like ours. And I think we're seeing activities that go well beyond that and violate what we all, I would think, overall think is and a portion from that.
I know you wrote about what's happening in Gaza, and I'll ask you about that, but I will just defend the actions of the administration this way. And it's more than just that's what the people wanted, but rather that misspending in the bureaucracy is deep enough that what they're doing is going to satisfy a lot of people. And maybe it will reduce the overall deficit. You know, maybe there will be good to come from this and there will be collateral damage. But I think some people, Elon Musk, Donald Trump, your fellows on the other side of the aisle would say that the good outweighs the bad here. Elon Musk himself said we're going to make some mistakes. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I've been told that you can't message the importance of process, but I got to try. Look, these are all Article I powers. They're not within the president. So if a president can totally disregard laws passed by the Congress, signed into law by a president, then we have really dramatically altered things. And as to the waste in government, as you remember, as a county commissioner, I wrote dozens of reports of how to streamline and reinvent government. That's altogether fitting, appropriate, and long overdue. But that's in partnership with the legislative body, overviewed by the courts, not unilaterally done in dark rooms where an unelected oligarch is making decisions that will have profound impacts on all of us. So this isn't using a surgical approach. It is a sledgehammer, and we're going to feel the effects of it locally, nationally, and internationally. I just had a meeting with the King of Jordan, and people say, why do I care about Jordan? Well, look, they are one of our most important allies in the Middle East. And the cutoff of USAID funds there, when they have a third of their population as refugees, could destabilize that region. It is the most important soft power we have, with only 1% of our budget. Unilaterally knocking that out makes us all less safe, and it makes us less as a country and a people.
One last thing before we go to Jordan and your piece about Gaza, but that is, where is the Congress in all of this? The courts have at least been sort of holding some of these actions at bay. It's not clear if the administration is abiding by the courts, and maybe it'll go to the Supreme Court. The real constitutional crisis to me will come when even this Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that, and the administration does anyway. We're not there yet. But where is the Congress? It's your powers that are being usurped. Why isn't the Congress saying more or doing more?
I think they're saying as much as they can. I mean, any outlet that'll let me on, I'm talking about this issue and trying to communicate why it matters. But right now, as you know, our basic civics, we have our voices and our votes. And if you're not in the majority, you can't compel legislation to come to the floor to stop these things. So at this point, we're at the mercy of the courts. But it's a good question, because at some point they're going to need us. They've got, what, a two-vote majority in the House to raise the debt ceiling?
Yeah, you've got a budget resolution coming up. Okay, but then have you called Darren LaHood? I think my audience sometimes gets frustrated that I'll have Raja Krishnamoorthy or you on, other Democrats, but that's the makeup of our congressional caucus here. When we reach out to Republicans of late, they really aren't available, and it's not just here. Have you personally petitioned them? Are Democrats pulling them aside and just saying, look, we know this is your guy, but you know this is wrong or bad, right? Is there any of that politicking going on?
I wouldn't even call it politicking. I think it's called the normal process of communicating with your colleagues, given how narrow the margins are. And we do that all the time. I will tell you this. I would say half to the majority of the Republicans think that most of what the president's doing unilateral violates the Article I powers, goes beyond his powers, breaks the law overall, and they have real concerns with much of what they're doing, including and probably especially virtually eliminating foreign aid.
You're an expert in these areas. Do you, and I know you're a Democrat, but do you think there is any way that the United States will somehow acquire the Gaza Strip and manage it?
No. Again, I just left a meeting with the King of Jordan. There's absolutely no one agreeing with the president's notion of this.
What did he say to you? What did the King of Jordan say to you?
What they said is this is a non-starter. He's even said it publicly. The fact is, it's the notion of this is ethnic cleansing. Already a third of his population are refugees. No one in the region can take any more. It's the wrong thing to do. And there's an alternative, and that is to help stabilize the region, create a two-state solution, work with our allies to have an Arab-based peacekeeping force there, and try to have safety and stability for Israelis and Palestinians
alike. That's never worked. But that's never worked. That's not yet happened, has it?
Yeah, and as a result, you have continuing conflicts. If you don't try, if you don't move in that direction, I guarantee you, you'll never have peace in the region.
So better to keep your eye on a two-state solution rather than moving the Palestinians, 2 million of them, to beautiful homes somewhere else, perhaps temporarily, and then moving them back in. Should the United States at least fund part of, as an almost Marshall Plan, the reconstruction of Gaza?
I think the United States needs to think about staying active on foreign aid in areas like Gaza and Ukraine and other regions, because if we don't fill that void, Russia and China and other adversaries will. But the very notion of moving people out of their home country is just so contrary to who we are as a people. It can never happen. It'll never have support. So that what we need to do is, Israel has every right to defend itself. Help them do that, but under the realization that Hamas is not just a military force, it's a movement. And at this point in time, what Israel's conflict is doing and the manner it's doing it, yeah, is just creating new recruits that'll be there for the next generation, as you say, and never solve the problem.
Mike Quigley is the Democrat from Illinois' 5th, spoke to the King of Jordan today. I'm so glad you gave us some of your time as well. Thank you, Congressman.
Anytime. Thank you.